You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
Hello, hello. How's it going, everybody? As luck would have it, this is actually going to drop on Christmas Eve. So, Merry Christmas to all you Christmas people out there. I hope you are enjoying it. Hope you get all kinds of holiday cheer and get to hang out with people and all the great fun stuff that that entails. So, Merry Christmas and enjoy this Christmas episode, I suppose. But before we get into that, I want to talk to you about Gun Street Wiring Shop because, you know, maybe you got some stuff for Christmas you weren't crazy about. Maybe they gave you a gift receipt, and so you just kind of slide that back. But you know what your guitar needs? It needs an upgrade to the wiring harness. You've been looking at doing coil splitting for a while. Maybe you'd get yourself some new pickups, get yourself a new wiring harness kit from Gun Street, and then wham bam, you got a whole new sound, almost a new guitar. It's like a new guitar experience just for you. So head over to GunStreetWiringShop.com and check out those beautiful candy-looking wiring harnesses and pick yourself up one. Treat yourself. I also want to tell you about the Fear the Riff Expo. Saturday, August 10th in 2019. Be there or be square. It's going to be a big, big event this year. It's been getting better and better. This will be its third year. I don't even know who all is going to be there yet. It's going to be a lot of the same vendors are returning. They're trying to get, you know, some notable guitar people to put on workshops and all kinds of stuff. It's in Brooklyn, New York City, Saturday, August 10th, 2019. The Fear the Riff Expo. I'm going to be there, and so should you. Let's hang out, you know? Let's fist bump. Let's nerd out on some pedals. Saturday, August 10th, Fear the Riff Expo. And also, let's not forget one last little plug for tonemob.com/reverb. You've been looking to pick up anything from reverb.com, which they got just about anything you could ever desire on there. You go to tonemob.com/reverb, that kicks a small percentage of your purchase back to the show and helps keep things going over here. A lot of you have taken me up on that, and I really, really appreciate it. And it's an easy thing. It doesn't cost you any extra, doesn't add any hassle. You just got to go to tonemob.com/reverb, and that will help us out immensely. All right, without further ado, here's Terry and Angelo. Boom! Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of the Tone Mob Podcast, a show about guitar tone and the people behind it. I'm your host, Blake Weiland, and with me today, I have Terry and Angelo from Maris. What's going on, guys?
Hey there, everybody. Hey over there. Hey.
You know, this is another one where we just pretend that we weren't talking for 30 minutes.
I love that.
How do you do?
How do you do, good sir? Sirs?
My good man.
What's going on today?
I'm glad we got to rap for a little bit before this.
It's always fun. I like to talk. I don't know if anybody knows that or not. So this is a particularly dangerous situation for me to be in, and dangerous for anyone who's on the other line, because who knows when he'll stop.
That's cool, man. It makes it more comfortable for me.
Good deal. Good deal. Well, we'll get started just right away, and I don't know, I'm going to pose the same question to both of you, so you get to pick who goes first. But, you know, what's the backstory behind Maris? What is your personal, like, musical backstory, and how did everything kind of evolve into its current state?
Yeah. That's probably a long one, but hope interesting. Angelo, you can go first.
Okay. Yeah. So I grew up in an Italian family outside of Detroit.
That's way back.
And well, I mean, it's appropriate. My grandfather, you know, he always encouraged people to play music, and my dad played accordion, and I inherited his accordion amp. But I didn't want to play accordion. So I got a guitar, and living in that area, Motown is a huge influence. So that was kind of like the genesis of it. And then getting a guitar and playing, you know, I wanted my friends to play too. So I convinced my friend to get a drum set, and then we were off. And we recorded in his basement. because his mom didn't care. We made lots of noise. And so it was all about that all through high school, you know, playing on the weekends, playing Friday night. And then when it came time to leave high school, I was, you know, along with being a music nerd, I was also a math nerd. So I went and I knew I wanted to get into something with electronics and signal processing. So that's where I had, you know, kind of ended up there. And I was lucky to work as a research assistant with at the University of Michigan with this cool guy who let me use his lab after hours to build pedals. And so I started building pedals there, just, you know, with their huge electronics lab and their machine shop, you know, and I would mill enclosures and build things. And the lab was the Center for Ultrafast Optical Science. So they had a ton. Their electronics lab was amazing. They had, you know, every part that you could even imagine. So I was always building stuff and then taking DSP classes. So that, you know, kind of all worked together. And as a minor, I took music classes and, you know, that was always my focus to be in electronics and kind of use that to make music. And then after school, ended up at Line 6, where I just kind of jumped right in and did DSP for a long time, for, you know, 13, 14 years, where I did the stomp boxes, I did the filter modeler, kind of all the 4x4 series is what we called them, the four button. I didn't work on the DL4, but the rest of them, you know, I worked on. And then I worked on the rack processors and worked close with George Tripps, who was out of Way Huge and working at Line 6. And we did the Tone Core pedal series and the rack processors. We did, you know, that sort of thing. And that's where I met Terry.
Yeah.
And we worked on, not directly, it was weird. We worked on the Spider series of amplifiers, small ones. We call them Steelhead internally. And they're the tiny amplifiers. And, you know, part of it was based on the stuff I was doing for the Tone Core pedals and kind of morphed that code into the amp. And Terry did the electrical side of that. And I was at Line 6 for a while. I was, you know, really happy doing DSP and sound design. Was the software director. And then I got a call from Terry for lunch. And we had some sushi. And we talked about doing something different. And he was ready to do something different. I was ready to do something different. And and that conversation is kind of what roped me into Maris. And now here we are.
Yeah, here we are. So, yeah, I'll take it back to just I'll rewind only a couple years first. So or a few years first. So me and Angela met at Line 6, but like you said, we didn't work on that many projects together. We just didn't work out that way, but we always were friends. So I think that's like kind of a fortunate thing. I'm really grateful for that. Instead of just coworkers, we were friends because we basically had this connection because we both loved comedy. So
yeah. Oh, interesting.
So we would always hang out at work and talk about music and comedy. So we talked a lot about Mr. Show in particular, which is like something that we both still love. And Gina loves too, actually. So yeah, all of us.
Yeah.
That's kind of a common thread.
Yeah, there's lots of Mr. Show references.
Yeah, so we make lots of dumb jokes.
I was like, there's gonna be something. They're gonna say something. I was waiting for a Mr. Show reference to pop in.
I wish I had one.
I'm not super familiar, but I have seen it a few times. It's pretty
well.
Pretty
Gina
awesome.
Did show us. She showed us a video of
Choo Choo, the Herky Jerky Dancer.
The Herky Jerky Dancer.
That was right our prep we for this on. Call. Yeah,
yeah. She was trying to loosen us up because Gina's real smooth and real cool and real like comfortable mm-hmm. with people and a good communicator, and I'm more of like stiff and shy.
You don't sound stiff and shy. Come on, it's.
I'm glad I don't. I'm glad
easy.
I don't.
This is
Angelo. I'm always just impressed with his radio voice. It's great.
He does have a nice sounds voice. Awesome. It sounds good.
Yeah.
So you guys went to sushi, and then magically Maris appeared. I feel like there's a gap there.
Well, that was just me calling up Angela and saying, hey, Angela, let's go have lunch. I haven't seen you in a long time. And then I said, kind of foolishly, casually, I like, maybe we can start a company together. And fortunately, it did work out. But so I guess there's a long history of Maris, too, which is, I guess for me, my parents got me a guitar. I wanted something else, but they got me a guitar for Christmas one year. So I grew up in a surf community. So I wanted to, all my friends and me surfed all the time. So I wanted to have an underwater camera. I didn't want like an expensive one, but I wanted one that I could like, you know, take pictures of my friends surfing.
Mm-hmm.
Parents completely ignored me on that one and got me a guitar instead, which is like the best thing that ever happened to me. So anyways, after I got a guitar, I was obsessed with it. And I got a terrible little amp too. It was a Fender Rad, which I was always embarrassed of the name.
Fender Rad. But, I don't even know what that Rad. Is.
It's one of the gray ones with the red knobs.
Oh yeah. Those aren't that bad, are they?
Well, it sounded pretty bad. It was tiny. I mean, the clean sounded okay, but the distortion was terrible. It's all solid state.
Oh, okay.
But the best thing about that amp was that it had a schematic with it. It came with a schematic in the back. And I was just fascinated. Like, I didn't know why they put a schematic in the back of the amp, but I thought it was cool. And I just looked at it for hours and hours. I remember that. And eventually led me to get more into electronics. I got, was pouring through books and stuff. And I just feel like I had a lot of fortunate, I'm really grateful for all the people along the way that I ran into who gave me just amazing opportunities and mentorship. So grateful for that. In particular, the first person that I worked for was, he was the only guy in town, small town that I grew up in, just north of LA, where we're actually at right now, again. But his name was Pat Bewley, and he was the only repair guy in town. So when I was 16, I begged him for a job, and he was kind of reluctant at first. And then he gave me a job, and it just allowed me to see how every kind of hardware in the music biz was made, like keyboards, PAs, guitar amps, a lot of guitar amps. So it was just awesome, like really eye-opening. I got to look at tons of schematics. I got to see really important and cool, I thought, was that I got to see how everything failed.
Yeah, that's interesting.
So I knew kind of what not to do later on. Then I got lucky again, really lucky again. I just sent, I forget even how I found out that there was a job opening, but Line 6 was only... it was a fresh company still, and they were only maybe like 30 minutes away from where I lived. So, I got a job there, luckily, and I was able to, you know, start helping out all the engineers. I was an engineering technician, and then a couple years after that, they promoted me to be a design engineer. So it was just like a total dream come true. And then I got to design hardware. I got to design guitar amplifiers. It was like, you know, I just loved going to work every day. And there, I had a few different mentors, but probably the most important one ended up being Michelle, who was the co-founder, and he also came from Oberheim. So he designed synthesizers way back, you know, back in the early 80s, and just had an amazing history and was like super patient with all the engineers, like mentoring and helping everybody. And teaching things. He liked to teach. And he said, we're still friends with him today. That's kind of where we're at as far as Line 6 went.
That's interesting. So do you still bounce ideas off of him? Or like, how does that all work?
It's more some... So I would say like it's more so just like a casual friendship now. More like, hey, how's your grandkids doing? And, you know, he'll come have lunch with us and ask how our kids are doing and come... If he'll give his advice here and there. He's super, super, super smart guy.
And he's been through the whole business.
Is he retired?
Yeah, been in the industry forever.
Yeah.
Is he retired now, or is he still working somewhere?
I don't know if he ever technically decided to retire, but he did leave Line 6 a few years ago and has been kind of just concentrating on, I think, artwork. He got really into doing 3D artwork and animation.
Oh, cool.
And then he's spent lots of time with his grandkids, I think.
Yeah. Takes a lot of classes. He's always taking classes, which is admirable.
So what happened after Line 6 then?
So I think I was 29. I think it was almost about to turn 30. And I was maybe, how do I say it?
Getting
at the time, I thought I was getting old. I thought I was getting old. It was really silly looking back on it, but I had this idea in my head that, like, oh, I need to try something. So I wanted to start a company. So Gina, my wife, who is also part of Marist now, thankfully, at the time, she was really supportive. And she said, you know, you got to just do this. Like, I'm going to support you. She was working, you know, luckily she had a full-time awesome job at General Motors Advanced Design. So,
oh, there you go.
In LA. So, so we had semi-stable income. So she just pushed me to do it. And I left Line 6 with the idea that I was going to start a company. And I did. I started Strymon, just with a little tube preamp idea that I had. And that took off slowly, really slowly, humbly for a year or so. And I teamed up with some of my friends that were also from Line 6, the Damage Control guys. And all of us started, decided to design pedals. And so we all started designing some pedals together. They were, say that like took off relatively slow first, but by about a year we were doing really well, and then it kind of just exponentially got popular. So that was a successful thing. Gina designed the Strymon logo in our crappy two-bedroom apartment at the time.
Oh, nice.
She came up with the name. She wasn't officially part of the company, but she designed every logo that you see on every Strymon pedal up until the Big Sky. That was the last thing we worked on. And then the time came where it was just like, okay, time to do something else. And Gina and I decided to start a different company, but this time she was going to actually officially be part of the company. And then around that same time, I had the conversation with Angelo, and it took about another year to get things off the ground. And officially we started in 2014, Maris?
Mm-hmm.
January.
Yeah.
January 2014.
Yeah.
Was January 2014. Yeah.
Right after Christmas, we just jumped right in.
Yeah. And we started doing pro audio. So I wanted to do something a little different. So I had this mic redesign to integrate pedals into the guitar recording process. We are talking through it actually. We got some SM7s running into the mic pre, but, so that was kind of already done. I had done that the previous year. So we shipped it maybe just a month after we started Maris. And then Angelo and I started working on a DSP platform for 500 series, which is a weird thing that nobody had done before. So we thought, let's do that.
It is kind of interesting. Yeah, I hadn't seen any DSP stuff in 500 until then.
Yeah, nobody had really done it yet. So we thought there was like a fun opportunity to do something kind of high end, pro audio, but DSP also.
That's really cool.
Yeah. We started working on the, Autobit, Bit Crusher. Yeah, no, it has a lot of cool things in it that we brought to that world. It was fun getting started in the on the pro audio side of things.
Yeah. It was, it was like a new startup. So it had, a lot of challenges to, introduce a new brand to people, But I think that's part of the fun. I mean, and all of us, I think we like do this just because we're really, really into music gear. We talk about music gear every day. We just kind of live it.
Yeah. And doing it our own way and for us, you know, we're grateful to have that opportunity to, you know, market the way we want, to make it sound the way we want, to make it look the way we want. That first product, I enjoyed so much what Gina did on the reveal video. We did, you know, some interesting, you know, video stuff that was, you know, just things you don't get to have a hand in when it's someone else's company or someone else's vision. So totally our vision and really happy to have that opportunity.
That's really cool. I know what you mean. It can be hard when there's too many cooks in the kitchen to really execute exactly what you are envisioning. And so it's kind of starting from scratch the way you guys did is it's got to be kind of refreshing in some ways.
Yeah, it's liberating. You don't, you know, when it's someone else's company, you have to respect, you know, their decision. That's their voice. But this is our voice, the three of us, you know, we get to, you know, make it our own and have our own personality shine through, which, I don't know, it's satisfying.
You see, like, a different kind of customer base buying the 500 series gear versus the pedals you guys eventually came out with?
Yeah, actually, it's kind of eye-opening for me, actually, because I'm the type of person who likes I just love everything that's electronics that has to do with recording or playing guitar or whatever. So I was always into pro audio, guitar pedals, guitar amps, guitars, synthesizers. But I think the greater, it's more common for somebody to be just really into one thing. Like, so in my experience, the guys who are into the 500 series are really like in the studio every day, you know, really professional, recording all the time. And then people who buy our pedals are just people who are super into pedals, and it crosses over a little bit, but not as much as I thought it would.
Go ahead.
No, I was just gonna say, yeah, those 500 customers are really dedicated to the format. Like, they're really into their setups and their studios, and you know, they're in that workflow.
Yeah, it is kind of a more so than pedals, it is sort of a rigid structure that you have to adhere to. I mean, pedals have to kind of fit on a board and follow some general designs, but then again, you also see the you know, like Roger Mayer rocket ships shaped ones and things like that.
Oh yeah, those old floor pedals, those are really cool.
Yeah, they're kind of,
yeah, fun. Yeah, there's some everyone's adventurous, and maybe in the studio you're adventurous in a different way. You're adventurous sonically, and you know, definitely you know, we see the studio customers really into having the highest quality, best fidelity. You know, they're really picky about it. So that's something we stressed a lot by having the best converters, you know, the best signal to noise ratio. It's something we really focused on for the pro audio world.
That makes a lot of sense. So I was going to ask this question next, but one of the listeners asked it in a much more entertaining way. So I'm going to use his. It's a Corey Nigro. He asks, what kind of acid do you take in order to create these things? But no, seriously, how do you guys come up with the concepts behind these things? I mean, the Polymoon is probably the most straightforward as far as like, I get what that does, you know? But then you get things like the Autobit and the Enzo, which are totally out there.
Part of it's conscious, and then I think part of it just happens naturally. Sometimes, so the conscious part of it is when we first started, we had like a very conscious decision to do things a little bit differently than we've done before. I think all the companies that Angela and I worked with before were recreating things from the past, like trying to do that pretty faithfully. When we decided to start doing effects again at Maris, we wanted to do things that didn't necessarily exist yet. So there was two parts to that. The first part was, okay, we're going to have an inspiration for everything. Like, so the Mercury 7 was just designed to do, kind of recreate the feel of Blade Runner, the whole vibe.
Mm-hmm. I love that.
And the second part of the equation for products for us was that we wanted electronics to become a musical instrument in and of themselves. So to have a pedal that you can only get sounds if you have that exact pedal or that exact effect, and you have to learn how to play it as an instrument, kind of becomes part of your instrument. So it was conceptually, that was the conscious part of it.
Yeah. I mean, that's exactly it. It kind of ties into what we were saying before, where it's, you know, having your own unique voice, having that personality, super important to us. I did that a lot where I, you know, would recreate, you know, filters and stuff, from existing products. And there's enough of those existing products out there. I think, you know, there's a lot of really cool recreations out there, but for me personally, I wanted to just break into something new, something that you could only get this sound with our pedal. And yeah, Terry is exactly right. We want them to be instruments of, you know, that you kind of play. And I feel like when you have that connection with your, you know, favorite guitar or, you know, your favorite amp, you know, it becomes something else. It becomes a part of you. It pulls, you know, inspiration out of you that, you know, you wouldn't get with another guitar or another pedal, or, you know, so that feeling is really important. I know that when I'm coding and I lose myself, you know, I'm, you know, constantly doing that thing where I change a little bit and I play a guitar a little bit. If I really get sucked in, if I, you know, change the code a little bit and I like lose 2 hours by messing around with it, I'm like, oh, it's getting close. It's something new. It's something different. You know, it holds my attention. So,
Hi, I'm Vincent, and I'm here to talk about the Marriott Mercury X. My dad's always going on and on about how cool Marriott is. He really went off on one about the Mercury X the other day. He said something about a 4,800 hertz sample rate and 99 preset locations and 33 banks, and something along the lines of the most advanced reverb pedal ever devised by man? That's all true, but I only care about one thing. This pedal sounds sick. So make sure you check out the Mercury X and all the other fine products at Marist.us, as well as fine retailers worldwide. All right, Dad, now can I have my talkie?
How exactly do artists get their music on Spotify, Apple Music, Deezer, Tidal, all these services? How in the world do you get your music there? Well, in the past, you had to use something called a record label. But these days, you can use DistroKid. DistroKid is the absolute easiest way to get your music up on streaming services, and it's the most affordable way to do so. Not only do plans start at $22.99 for the entire year, that's less than $2 a month, DistroKid also does not take a cut of your streaming revenue, unlike some other services out there. Even better if you sign up by going to tonemob.com/distrokid. That's tonemob.com/distrokid. One more time, that's tonemob.com/distrokid. You'll get 30% off. That's right, 30% off. They're already extremely reasonable prices. So go to tonemob.com/distrokid and get your music out there.
So what is the unconscious part of that equation then?
Oh, okay. So the part that comes more naturally is just, I think, me and Angelo and Gina hanging out all day long together and kind of letting things inspire us. And especially me and Angelo just talking about songs and talking about music and talking about effects, you know, we might have heard that take us on in a certain direction, or you know how just like a sometimes you'll have an idea and then it leads to or an inspiration that leads to a bigger idea. I think that part of it happens, And so we're collaborating the whole time on how the knobs are going to be laid out, how the UI is going to work, and how the architecture is going to come together. And then, oh, we need this. We need to do this thing that is going to change the product a little bit, or, you know, it just happens that way. It's not like I write a document and then Angelo writes the software based on that document. It's more like us just hanging out and trying to create the coolest thing possible.
I see. It's just kind of a byproduct of the way you guys work now, essentially.
Definitely. That part of it is organic part.
Yeah, the whole product document thing is never. That was a terrible idea. I really think.
Well, Angela, we've worked that way.
Yeah.
Okay. So you've tried that. You tried that in the past.
Well, not here. Not here, at Maris. Yeah. Not at Maris.
Past jobs, it would be like, you guys are engineers and you do. You'd make this product for us.
Yeah, I mean, software and electronics is an art form. It's our art, you know, so they're definitely artistic expressions, you know, in code and in sound and in circuit design, you know, so they're personal that way.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I've always kind of viewed it that way. I kind of relate to what you guys are saying. I can't really talk too much about it right now, but I'm going through a very similar process. And I understand, like, if somebody just handed the engineer a piece of paper that says make it do XYZ, that's not really as fun as discussing it and you know, working together to, and you know, like, sometimes just through the discussion, I'm sure you guys come up with a new idea. Like, you're like, we're trying to make this one aspect of it work this particular way, and it's not quite, well, maybe if we had a workaround, and oh wait, that's just cooler all around, we'll do it like that. I'm sure things kind of unfold that way for you sometimes.
Yeah, all the time.
Yeah, that stuff happens constantly.
And I think it would be really hard to get these different kind of products if, you know, if it wasn't working that way. So I think that's really interesting and cool.
Yeah, I mean, we're connected. I mean, it all comes through our own personal love of all those things, you know, of making music, our own, you know, personal love of gear, our personal love of music, our personal love of songs, all of that gets shared together and, you know, is expressed in our pedals. And with always that eye on making it, you know, something that adds to the equation. You know, I want to have our things occur as something new and additional. You know, we have all these pedals existing already. We have all these, you know, great effects and processors and wonderful stuff that already exist. This is kind of an attempt to add on to that and kind of grow that world.
Yeah. I use this example a lot when talking to people kind of doing unique things, but not another tube screamer. You know, a tube screamer is wonderful, but there's thousands of them at this point.
Yeah.
Some people,
and there's thousands for a reason. They sound good, but yeah, I know what you're saying. Yeah. You know, there's value in everything. There's value in every product. You can make music with anything. But for us to have them feel like a new instrument and kind of bring inspiration, and, you know, that's constantly, you know, something we're talk about all the time and think about.
Yeah, that's like a big drive for us. I think listening to music in the office or in the lab or whatever is a big drive too. Like, all of us I think all of us have different, a little bit different tastes, but all compatible. So like, Angelo brings more of like a jazz and,
fusion-y
shreddy
prog
rock type of vibe and flavor. And, Gina is really into electronic music. So that's a big influence on us and the type of artists we kind of reach out with and interact with. And all of us are into synthesizer music.
Yeah.
And then, I like metal. Nobody really knows that about me, but I like metal, and punk rock and stuff like that. I mean, I grew up listening to mostly punk rock and metal, so that's a big influence on me. And then I mean, I listened to a ton of guitar music when I was younger too. And, yeah, lots of Police. I love Andy Summers. That's probably my number one guitar player of all time.
Andy Summers, number one.
Number one. I love, modulation because of him.
Ah, that makes sense.
And delay and guitar synthesizers.
And keytars.
Yeah, he did it all. He really, well, you know, there's a lot that he did that was kind of pioneering and kind of putting stuff together with his, you know, his like a wide array of Roland products that he would use. But he would really make some amazing things like the GR300 kind of filter swells. That was something that I wanted to kind of reference in the poly mode of Enzo. You can totally get his, you know, swelling chords, you know, with the Enzo. So it's not an exact replication, but it's kind of our inspiration on that. So you can totally get to that sound. And with the Polymoon too, the Polymoon has this wide range of modulation that you can get out of it. And there's references to Holdsworth and Zappa on that pedal, but definitely Andy Summers as well. There's a lot of that going on inside the Polymoon too.
Oh, this reminds me of one of my favorite things about Angelo. He's one of the world's best gift givers. I like when we were still working at Line 6, I had a turntable at work, and I would play like old Police records that my dad handed down to me. But I had them when I was a kid, but he gave them to me luckily when I moved out. And so Angelo brings me like he scours the internet and finds this old, I think it was a Guitar Player article or something like that, but he like, you know, he printed on the copy machine of this old interview of Andy Summers talking about his old gear. And it was like the best thing. I was like, wow, that's so thoughtful of you, Angelo. And then this Christmas, or no, it was my birthday, he gave me Dune and Tron playing cards.
Yeah, they're pretty rad.
That is
from the 80s, and they still had 80s gum in them.
How'd it taste?
I didn't eat it.
Yeah, it was pretty rigid.
Don't be.
I think that
on,
stuff was.
In the, just do it.
Oh man, no, it was in the trash.
I was afraid to eat it.
But just to be fair, when that gum was new, that Topps gum, it was awful back then. So.
Well, that's true.
I don't think it really changed chemically in any way. I think it was the exact same.
Yeah, it's probably it's a time fine. Capsule for sure.
Yeah.
That's amazing. So, do you guys prefer the pedal end of things, or are you more interested in the 500, or is it pretty equal?
Man, all of it and more. 19-inch rack, yeah, you name it.
I think there's lots of stuff we wish we had more time to do, but
Euro rack
pedals is a nice thing because. So what I like about pedals is that you don't have to have anything special to use them. All you need is a guitar and an amp, and it's like turn it on and have fun.
Right, you don't need a rack of any sort or anything like that.
Don't need a rack, and you don't need a controlled environment, and you don't need you know, all the stuff that you need to be like a pro studio. You know,
yeah,
it's just a more accessible type of piece of gear.
Yeah, and people generally understand like you plug in the 9-volt, you plug in and out, and here we go. Like it doesn't take as much explanation. For a lay person, I suppose they can kind of plug in
for sure
and rock out just instantly.
Yeah. But yeah, personally, I mean, everything, software, I mean, you name it, like Terry mentioned earlier, there's not any part of the entire, you know, music gear industry that we're, you know, not into. I love buying cymbals.
Cymbals.
Yeah. There's, you know, if you can create with it, I mean, that's something that's important to me too, is that act of creation, creating something out of nothing, taking a blank slate and making something happen is so fascinating. So the tools and the, you know, the road that gets you there, it's extremely interesting to me. You know, I you know, so any sort of thing that you can make music with, I'm automatically drawn to it.
Yeah, I agree. There's like a certain moment when you're playing with a band or your friends, jamming with your friends, and like I love that moment where it's like, okay, this is really working. Like this sounds super cool. And that happens a lot of times if you're writing a song in a group together, or if you're I feel like the same thing happens at certain moments when you're creating a piece of gear together. Like you're there's just certain moments along the way where it's so fun because it starts to really sound good or really look good, or there's a bunch of kind of milestones along the way of releasing
absolutely.
A new piece of gear that's gratifying to me.
Right.
Yeah.
I totally get that. I want to jump back into some of the Facebook group questions. This is actually kind of a new thing. I failed to make the announcements oftentimes. I'd just be like, oh yeah, I recorded with this person. They're like, oh, why didn't you ask them XYZ? And I'm like, because I didn't think about it. But I got a good question in here from Jonathan Diaz. He said, I'm going to modify it just a little bit. He said, what was the pedal that made you want to create pedals? And I'm going to change that to, what was the piece of gear that made you want to create? Like the one that really kicked it off.
This is such a cool question. I don't know, Angela, you want to go first or I'll go?
Yeah, you go first.
Okay. I'll let Angela think about it. Yeah. I have an answer that I hope it doesn't sound contrived because it's absolutely true. So, when I was a teenager, I read the Craig Anderton book, which is so awesome. I love that book. And it basically teaches how to make, you know, pretty rudimentary gear. It doesn't have, not all of them are guitar pedals, but there's a few guitar pedals in the book. And I made the Tube Sound Fuzz, and that was the first pedal I ever built, maybe when I was 14 or something like that. I blew it up probably 3 times before it ever worked.
Of course.
Which is, so it was a good learning lesson, but I didn't really like the way it sounded that much. I was like, that's all right. The first pedal that, after that, I was pretty much like, because like I said before, I was playing like mostly in punk rock or metal band. So I was really just like a chord into amp kind of guy. Like I didn't use pedals that much until I started working at Lane 6. I started getting into more effects again. And the first pedal that I was like really excited about pedals again was the Echo Park. I love that delay.
Oh, yeah.
And Angelo designed it. So.
Well, good job. How sweet. That pedal is rad.
But I'm being totally serious. I love that pedal.
Wow.
So I started using that in a band situation. And what I did was that pedal, I loved it, but it was like a little noisy in front of my amp. So I rehoused it in a different box. But I loved the delay sounds of that thing. So it became like really integral to one of the bands I was in at the time called the June Echo, which nobody knows about. But if anybody wants to listen to it, it's on iTunes.
Somebody will.
Nobody's ever heard. Nobody's ever heard my any of the bands I've ever been in. But
I understand. I know.
Now they will.
Same
but feeling. Yeah, you know how it is. You make music just because you like it, not because you want to be famous or something.
Right.
At least I do. So yeah, it was really that pedal. Like I love the Echo Park, and I think the Polymoon, like for me, was a like an attempt to get back to see if we could make a pedal that I liked more than the Echo Park.
Ah.
So and I do. I love the Polymoon. So thanks, Angel.
Thanks, Angelo.
You're welcome. Yeah, the Echo Park was a lot of fun to do. Thank you for that. That's very generous. But yeah, you know, there is some DNA. The Polymoon definitely steps beyond that. But yeah, there's definitely Echo Park DNA. I mean, it's hard. I mean, it's hard to, when you're putting your own voice into it, it's hard to, you know, not have some of those commonalities and everything. But I guess for me, it's the one thing that maybe got me started on the gear quest was, just flipping through those old like 86, 1987 Guitar World magazines where they just had these enormous refrigerator, you know, these crazy racks of gear.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, me too.
And it was so, I mean, intoxicating, you know, to someone in eighth grade to be like, oh my God, look at all that stuff. Look at that H3000. Look at and there's a part of it. So, you know, by that time I was already playing with my best friend, Mark. He's playing drums and we, you know, had a bass player and we're, you know, going for it. And there's a part of it like, ah, you know, why don't I sound the same? At that point, what I didn't know is, well, it's a lot in your hands. you know, all those players are going to sound like themselves, even with like the shittiest guitar and shittiest amp. But what Joe, you know, what drew me in is like, oh, it must be those amazing racks. And so I, you know, started along that quest too and got the Lexicon Alex, the cheapest Lexicon I could get, and the Marshall JMP1. But that setup kind of got me thinking about like, oh man, this could be a career. I can make these amazing tools that, you know, I want and other people want, and I want to be a part of this. I want to figure out how these work. You know, how do you make these things? And I was lucky enough to, you know, be able to follow that, you know, path, and it led me here. So I feel really lucky to have that happen.
Yeah, I totally had that same experience too with the guitar magazines, because the neighbor across the street from my parents' house, he played guitar casually. I never heard him play, but he gave me a whole, he was just cleaning out his house one time and he gave me a box of guitar player magazines that was all the way back from like, I think the first one was like 1988. So, I mean, this was the early 90s. So it was maybe like 4 or 5 years worth of guitar player magazines. And this is pre-internet too. Angela and I kind of grew up at the same time, fortunately. So that's another thing we have in common. But yeah, pre-internet, it was just like, to find out what was new, you had to read magazines, and you saw these, yeah, gigantic racks of expensive, kind of unobtainable gear for us at the time.
Yeah.
It was just pretty exciting to check out. I loved it.
Yeah, I can relate to that too. A lot of people, I mean, I'm a little bit younger, but and I used to work with a bunch of older guys at my last job, and they always made fun of me for being the young guy. And they're like, oh, you don't remember, you know, before the internet. And I'm like, yes, I do. I was I was like, I grew up riding bicycles, and you know, like we didn't have a computer for years growing up, and like, and then we didn't have internet for years after that. Like, I know what this, I know what that's like. So,
yeah, it's a different place now. I don't think I had a computer until I was 14, probably, or 15.
Yeah,
like a computer that actually, I had a Commodore 64, but that didn't get you on the internet.
I didn't have a computer until about the same age. So, yeah, I was a little bit younger, maybe like 13, but. Yes, I definitely remember pre-internet, everybody.
Yeah, and you had to go to the music store to check it out. And yeah, all through high school, I went just right next to my house. There was this place called The Music Box. And they always had, this is in Michigan, they always had the best gear. They'd all of those things that I would love, they had. And they had, you know, piles of synths, piles of everything. And so I'd spend a lot of time there. I had lessons there, but I'd get there early, play, you know, in the store, play through everything and drive people nuts. It probably was terrible. And then have my parents pick me up late, just sitting there playing through all that gear. And I eventually ended up working there, but yeah, that early rack stuff and not having, you know, now all that stuff you can just listen to on YouTube and you can, but you know, you had to get hands-on back then.
Yeah, I remember, you know, in high school being like, what do you want to do today? Like on the weekend or something. Me and my friends would be like, let's go to Guitar Center or whatever store. Usually it was Guitar Center because that was the closest one. But like, and we just like, what are we going to do? Well, who knows? We're just going to go to Guitar Center and try out all this.
Play the new Gibson.
Exactly. Try out all this stuff that we absolutely can't afford. I'm like, that sounds like a blast. I'm sure the store loved us just hanging out there all day and then buying a pack of
strings. All these kids who can't afford anything. Yeah, sure.
Buying a pack of strings and going home. Like, I'm sure they loved it. But like, that was just it. Like, how are we supposed to know if we don't go play it? There's no other way to know.
Yeah. No. Well, and it led us here too. No, so.
Exactly. And here is awesome.
It's not for nothing. Yes.
So I want to ask you kind of a funny question. or I don't know if it's funny or not, because you guys are actually involved in it. But line stepping back to the line.
I'm laughing already, so you're off to a good start.
Stepping back to the line 6 days, what do you think about it's sort of become a meme of itself, of the Spider 2 Insane channel?
Oh, that's a funny question. I never heard anybody ask that before, because both Angelo and I worked on this Spider 2. That was one of the only projects we ever worked on together. And first of all, man, whatever people think about Line 6, I love Line 6. Like, just because it gave us so much opportunity and chance to, like, everybody there was so generous, like, mentoring us and teaching us about everything about engineering. Because we were, you know, the engineering department was really cool there. Fun place to work. I didn't always love the products after they shipped, to be 100% candid, but they were really reliable, really good products. They made a lot of different types of guitar tones accessible to people.
Mm-hmm.
Insane Channel is not something I use.
But you're a metal guy. What else would you use?
That's a funny thing, because we were just talking about it yesterday. because the meme that I love, I've been on a metal pedal kick lately, and the meme that I love is the Metal Zone meme.
Oh, yeah.
Because I remember trying a Metal Zone when I was maybe 13 years old, and I was like, whoa, this is cool. And then I never bought one, and I never had one. I just bought one last week, and I have to say, it's pretty cool. I like the Metal Zone. There, I said it.
I mean, honestly,
it's instant Metallica.
If you said it right, that's the thing. Is everyone? It's a box of bees. I'm like, if you don't EQ it right, though, like, you can get it to sound. You know, it takes some tweaking, but you can get it to. That's part of the. It's not really a problem, but that's part of the problem with it, is that it's so flexible. The EQ on it's awesome. And I think everyone agrees.
The EQ is super flexible. It instantly made me want to play Master of Puppets riffs and Holy Wars by Megadeth.
I don't know if you guys seen it, but the reason I brought that up is because once you guys started talking about that, you worked on it. I have a Spider 2 over here in the room.
Oh, you do? Cool. Which one is it?
The 112.
All right. Yeah, we definitely are.
So it's the one, it's gray panel with silver knobs?
Yeah, gray panel with silver knobs.
Yeah.
Yep. Angelo.
And George Trips. George Trips was the product manager for that line, the Spider 2 amplifier line. I think it's easy to hate on anything. I think, you know, what I've noticed is that for people who are, like, way into creating music, they'll take, like, the crappiest stuff and elevate it into something, like, you know, then everyone has to have it. I don't think that's going to happen with the Spider 2.
Who knows, man? You never know.
But you know who did play one and who used them backstage was Eddie Van Halen. And he just loved the insane saturation of the Insane Channel.
Did he like the Insane Channel?
Oh, yeah.
I didn't know that.
There's pictures of him. He that was, so his two favorite products. Well, he had three favorite products. He had the Echo Pro, which is a DL4 rack mount.
Mm-hmm.
He had the Pod 1.0, and he, like, there was a bunch of people in the room, including the founders, and he's like, never stop making the Pod 1.0. Because he pointed at, like, the Pod XT and the Pod, you know, whatever, you know, with the screens, and he's like, that's too much. He loved the simplicity of just turning, like, a Logic encoder and getting a sound. And then the Spider 2 was his go-to amp for, you know, backstage prep.
Cool. I didn't even know
that. And it made it on records too. That
what?
It seriously did. No, it was cool. George Trips and I really, you know, this was like one of those moments where you're like just filled with gratitude. We got to go drop off and teach him how to use an Echo Pro. He wanted the rack one. And the amp that he was playing through in the control room was the stinking Spider 2.
That's so funny.
Man, that's fine.
Yeah.
We are brought to you today by Sweetwater, specifically the Gear Exchange. You may have heard about this. This is a place where you can go to buy and sell your used gear. Maybe you got a petal over there that's just kind of collecting dust. Maybe there's something you've been eyeing from the Sweetwater catalog. Well, right now is a great time to turn that unused gear into something you're actually going to use. Even better, if you sell on the Gear Exchange, you can keep 100% of the sale as long as you choose a Sweetwater gift card as your payout method. That is not too shabby, because let's be honest, most of this buying and selling we do is just to fund new gear purchases, and that is a great way to reach a wide variety of customers and keep 100% in your pocket, or rather, on your pedal board. So go check out the Sweetwater Gear Exchange and turn that unused gear into something that's actually going to help you write that next huge riff.
Hello there. I'd like to introduce you to your new best friend, the Chase Bliss Audio Lossy. Lossy is a collaboration between Chase Bliss and Good Hertz. It's meant to give you some control over those weird digital artifacts that come with very compressed audio. You're hearing it right now. All the changes that are taking place are strictly coming from my playing dynamics. I'm just interacting with the pedal and letting it do its thing. In some true stereo goodness. If you'd like some more details about Lossy, I'd invite you to head over to chasebliss.audio.com. Gonna like what you find.
Well, it was funny because I you know, Instagram is a wonderful place, but it's also kind of funny at times, because people who like cat, maybe I don't know if you guys probably don't run into this as much as I do, because my account's like very like broad, and so there's people, there are a lot of people who follow it that don't necessarily listen to the podcast or like are really like involved in the Tone Mob community at all. So they don't really know me that well, but they're like, oh, this guy posts cool pictures sometimes, you know? So I did one the other day. I was just goofing off, and I took a quick video of starting the Spider 2 and then being like, oh yeah, baby, here we go. And I just turned the knob until the Insane Channel was lit up, and I just cut it off. And I had so many people, not so many, probably like 4 or 5 people comment like, you need to get a real amp, man. You need to get real amplifiers.
Oh, wow.
And I'm like, I'm like looking behind it. I'm like, well, there's a Benson. There's another Benson. There's a Sun. There's a 1965 Ampeg. There's a 1961 Fender Champ. Like, I guess I need to get a real amp, I suppose. I don't know. Like, it was just really kind of comical, like, to, like, man, you stop playing that. Like, people have a lot of animosity towards it. And I'm like, it's kind of fun, actually. I'm here to tell you.
I think it's probably a little bit is bad reaction to the marketing. I think, you know, kind of the marketing around that wasn't, you know, it was a little bit lowest common denominator and a little bit, you know, not, you know, that was the thing that always got me with Line 6 is like, we put a ton of like really cool things inside the products that no one would discover because they would kind of just discount them as being, you know, mass market or, you know, oh, that's too pedestrian. Everyone has one of those. Those are in bad taste. No one likes those. And
man, the thing that I'm most proud about that design is that it is super reliable. It almost never breaks.
Yeah.
Oh, that. Yeah. I don't think I've ever seen a broken one.
No, you probably won't find one. That's good. That's a big influence from Michel Dwadique too.
Oh, like, yeah. Gigantic.
Yeah, man. And that was something that I weirdly went back to his, like, he also worked in a repair shop, and he worked in an organ repair shop and early synth. And he said he'd always repair the EMS synth, Synthy A, you know, you repair those all the time. The ones that have that like Battleship Matrix on there. But he said, I never repaired a Yamaha synth or organ, and that blew him away. And that's something he wanted for Line 6. He's like, I want to get, you know, complete reliability on everything. So it's definitely something that impressed us too, that we shoot for the same thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
What's interesting, not to keep going back to Line 6, but I'm sure you guys were involved in a lot of things over there. that are considered groundbreaking. Like you mentioned some of the modulation stuff. I mean, the DL4 is legendary. Everyone agrees that the DL4 is like one of the most fantastic pedals ever.
Yeah, for sure.
Which I oddly don't own one still, which I need to fix that. But that's neither here nor there. But is it kind of strange to go from working in a bigger organization like that and then kind of slowly shrinking down into a very small organization over time?
I think it's a lot different. I wouldn't say it's weird. I would say it's great because we got our feet wet in engineering in a place that was, I think, a really healthy place to learn engineering.
Yeah, and for sure.
We got to concentrate on it back then. Now, being in a small company, we have a lot more freedom, but we have a lot more roles to fill too. So maybe more stressful being in a small company.
Right.
As far as just keeping the lights on. But I like different aspects of both situations, but I definitely prefer being in a smaller group because I just feel like you can be more creative.
That makes sense. It makes a lot of sense. See, I'm going to go back to one more question from the Facebook group.
I like this Facebook group ideas. Everybody's coming up with good questions, and I've never heard you do that before.
I think the first time I did it was I've done it before. And I sometimes didn't necessarily say some of the questions came from there. But this time, when I know that I've got a guest on that people know about already, or have seen their pedals around or whatever the case may be, I'm like trying to remember, ask the people what they want to know. So I've done that 3 episodes in a row. I've done that with you guys, with Jamie from Earthquaker, and I did it with the Old Blood guys. So cool. I'm trying to keep on that train because I think people like that stuff. So
awesome. I have an Old Blood t-shirt on right now.
Yeah.
I'm wearing it right very now. Nice. Man, those guys are awesome.
Yeah. Super nice.
Dustin Babitsky wants to know what your favorite settings on the Enzo are.
Ooh, I'll let you go first, Angelo.
Yeah, there's not one favorite setting. I don't know. That's hard to say because it's kind of just in the moment. One of the things that I just was doing 2 nights ago that I really liked was setting the, you know, using the Enzo in ARP mode, so it's doing a slow arpeggio, but then I would use the auto bit because the auto bit has a triggered sequencer and it has a triggered pitch sequence. So I'd have each note of the arpeggiator then get resequenced by the auto bit. So I was making these like almost instant compositions with the 2 pedals, but I don't have a favorite setting. I mean, I love kind of like all the different aspects of it. I love the, you know, poly mode for big sustaining chords. And even within each mode, there's like a bunch of different, you know, sounds I love. I love the Portamento stuff. And I really like the Pat Metheny stuff you can get with the mono, you know, synth lead line stuff. But yeah, just lately, this combination of auto bit and Enzo was having a lot of fun.
Nice.
Cool. I like to run different things through it. If I'm playing guitar through it, I love the arpeggiator. That thing's a lot of fun. And I like to do, you can record, Angelo put a split mode in it. So you can run your dry signal out of one output and then have the arpeggiator on the synth running out of a different output. So you can run a distortion pedal on the dry part and then have the synth arpeggiating on the wet side. And it's just like a super cool sound. Then if I'm running drum machines through it, I love the filter and the pitch shifter with drum machines. That's hours of fun for me.
Yes, I can see that. I got to play one here recently and I was like, oh baby, this thing speaks to me in all the right ways. I was really, really liking
awesome.
It. So just one more kind of question that I really wanted to dig into myself and I kept forgetting about. So where'd the name come from, Maris?
So Gina thought of the name. She is good at thinking of names. She thought of Strymon too, and she thought of Maris. We when we we decided to start a company before we had a name. So it took a few months to come up with something that we thought was good. And one day, I don't remember how it came about, but she said the name and I was like, that's it.
That's it.
And then we called Angelo and we're like, Angelo, we have a name. And that's how it happened.
But does it mean anything to anybody or does it just sound rad?
It has an internal like acronym was the genesis of it, but we don't really tell anybody the acronym.
What?
So that's not a big deal. It's nothing funny or crazy. It's just like a
You can't do that to us. The listeners are so mad right now.
I can't tell you.
They're so mad right now. They're gonna
nobody's
they're gonna be throwing tomatoes here in just a second.
It's just Maris.
Oh, this is a
well, the logo kind of has a meaning behind it. The logo is an M, really abstracted, but just three vertical lines. So that's me and Gene and Andrew.
Oh, cool. That's rad.
Yeah.
That's really rad. All right, guys. Here's the question that some of you know is coming. I hope you guys are prepared to answer it, you know, in a way that doesn't ruin your company, basically. That's what I'm hoping. What kind of pizza do you like?
So, I hope this also doesn't sound contrived and goofy and cheesy, but my brother, who is he's my younger brother, he's a filmmaker. Man, he makes good pizza. He makes my favorite pizza in the world. I like pizza and just in general, but he makes a couple of pizzas that I've never tasted before anywhere else, and they're kind of weird and my favorite. So he makes I think my favorite one is pesto sauce with walnuts.
Oh, weird.
A little bit of walnuts, and sometimes he does cheese, but usually he goes full vegan pizza. And then he makes another one that's vegan also, that's tahini and sun-dried tomatoes. Man, his pizzas are the best. But there's lots of pizzas I like, so I don't discriminate, but his are my favorite.
All right, that's solid.
For me, I guess the one that's kind of like the most nostalgic one, my wife and I met in Ann Arbor at during school, and we lived in a place across from Da Vinci's Pizza. So that one was like our you know, hits all the nostalgic notes, and you know, so we ordered that all the time. And the funny thing is, I could look out my window and see them make the pizza because they were so close. So that one hits all like the nostalgic notes. For lately, what I really like, and I like it a lot because it's rare, you know. In San Francisco, there's something called Little Star Pizza, and they make a cornmeal crust, which I was really skeptical about. In fact, my mother-in-law, she says, I just ordered the best pizza. It's coming. And immediately, like, I'm really cynical. Like, no, it's not the best pizza. It's terrible. Like, what are you talking about? You can't make that claim. And the pizza comes from Little Star. It was so good. Really thick crust, you know, cornmeal. And it's unlike, you know, any other pizza I've had outside of the Bay Area. And there's a couple places in the Bay Area that do it, but she lives right close to Little Star, so we always get that.
That's interesting. I'm very curious.
So what Angelo's not telling you, every time she visits him in LA, he makes her bring pizza.
That's a real deal thing. She does. I'm like, can you buy a pizza and bring it down? They travel really well.
That's a reasonable request. Come on, she lives right there.
Yeah.
Come on.
I know. So she'll order it and then jump on the 5 and bring it down.
Very
nice. Which I'm happy that she does that. That's a huge treat.
I'm gonna have to try this.
Thank you.
I'm gonna have to try this pizza sometime.
Oh man, it's so good. It's in the Mission. There's a couple of them around there. There's a really good spot in Oakland for that same really thick cornmeal crust pizza. But yeah, if you're in San Francisco, definitely get one. I was totally not a believer, and my first reaction when someone tells me it's going to be the best, I'm like, no, you're lying.
Don't you lie to me.
But it was really good. Yeah.
Lying right to my
exactly.
face.
That's the way it
not
felt.
Even shy. Yeah.
How can you do this? But it was amazing. She was right.
Nice. Good times. Well, are you guys going to Vietnam?
We will. Yeah. We'll have, I guess officially we'll have a little pedalboard set up at the Stompbox exhibit. They have a booth every year with a bunch of little makers, our friends.
Deli
Audio. A lot of them are friends. Yeah.
Yeah.
That'll be fun.
And so we'll be there.
Awesome.
I'll be. Yeah.
And then we'll be walking around hanging out with people too. So we got to hang out.
Come eat pizza.
Yeah.
Are you going to have pizza?
Yeah, we're going to do pizza. We do a pizza. We do a Tone Mob pizza party at Nat, man. We don't
send us the invite.
Yes. Oh yeah, you got it. This one's going to be a little different. And people are probably getting really tired of me saying this at the end of every episode because I'm inviting everyone to the pizza party. But
there's like 800 people.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. We
just one pizza.
We had a restaurant that we would go to the first couple years, and last year I told them, yeah, there'll probably be 20 or 30 people again. So, you know, just if that's cool. And they're like, yeah, it's fine. And like over 50 people showed up. So we're going to try to have them deliver it outside and we'll eat it outside at NAMM. I think that's the plan. So it'll be a lot more comfortable for everybody, including the restaurant, because they did not like that very well.
Yeah, that's a shock.
We took over the whole place and then some. So,
yeah.
And then they shoot us out because they were being bombarded by a girls like soccer league right after us. So they just had they worked hard that day.
Yeah,
but I bet they should have been grateful for your presence.
The owner probably liked it. Staff probably wasn't super into it, though, I'm guessing.
Well, man, send us the invite for the pizza party. That sounds fun.
We'll put it together. All right, one last thing. This is your chance to like put up a billboard. If there's something you want to tell everybody, whether it's like an important personal message or where to find you or whatever, this is your time to advertise.
Well, yeah. I hope everybody would like to check out our effects. Just go to Meris.us, MERIS.US, and then we have Instagram and Facebook and all that stuff. Little links there, but that's where you can find out about us.
Yeah.
What we're up to.
Nice. Very nice. All right. Well, I guess I'll close this out then. So for Terry and Angelo, this is Blake. And as always, folks, good luck and good tones. Those guys are great. What lovely chaps to talk to. We talked quite a bit after the episode was over. And if you'd like to hear that, you can check it out over at Patreon. Oh, what? Yeah, I'm not joking. Patreon.com/ToneMob, where for $5 a month, you can get more of this. You just listen to the whole thing, so something tells me you like this kind of stuff. Well, if that's your thing, head over to Patreon and check out the different levels. I think you might find something there that fits your particular taste. And there again, helps support the show, helps keep things going, and you get extra content and other things. A bunch of people got custom printed Tone Mob buffers this year from Solid Gold Effects. They made a bunch of custom graphic buffers for a bunch of patrons that were over a certain level. That's one of the things we do. We give them surprises in the mail every once in a while. So if that's your thing, go over to patreon.com/ToneMob and give it a check out and see. Give it a check out? Is that a thing that people do? I don't know. I guess it is now. That's one place you can go. Also, make sure you check out the Meris website and all of their goodies and demos that are around. I played Enzo recently. Oh, man. I have to get one of those. They're so good. The Meris guys are great, and the products are great, and you just heard all that. So I'll shut up now, and you can go listen to something else. Okay, bye. Oh, yeah. Merry Christmas again. Because that's this time. In fact, I'm recording it. Christmas is tomorrow. So Merry Christmas to all you wonderful people. Have a good one. One last thing before we totally sign off here, I just want to remind you that if you do any shopping at Stringjoy, that's Stringjoy Guitar Strings made in Nashville, that will help me out as well. As I've said for years, I'm heavily involved in that company, and I really do think they're making the best products on the market. So if you would like to try custom strings, go to tonemob.com/stringjoy
and check them out today. I seriously love what the team down there is doing. I help them out with all kinds of things, and by you supporting them, you are also supporting me as well. And hey, you need some strings, so why not get some custom strings just for your guitar and playing style? Again, the link for that is tonemob.com/stringjoy, and that will take you right to their website, and you can do all your shopping through there, and that will help everyone involved out. So thank you very much. Talk to you next time. We are brought to you by the wonderful folks at Gun Street Wiring Shop. Yes, Gun Street Wiring Shop. I've talked about them before. I used to say based out of Bend, Oregon, but guess what? Sean moved to my neck of the woods. Sean's in Portland. Sean is awesome and has helped me with a bunch of stuff lately. And if you have wiring needs for your guitar, he can help you too. If you want to get weird with it, he can get weird. If you just need to spruce things up a little bit, there's your guy. He takes all the guesswork out of doing your guitar wiring, and he makes it simple, and his customer service is top-notch, and I can't say enough good things about Gun Street as a company. I really respect Sean and what he's all about, and the product is top-notch. I've got 3 different guitars that now have Gun Street harnesses in them, and I could not be happier. So go to GunStreetWiringShop.com and check them out.
One Hit Thunder is a podcast where we both celebrate and have a good laugh about bands and artists that had just one hit that we all know. Each week, we're joined by a guest from the world of music or comedy to learn more than you ever thought you would about some songs that you can't forget. And we decide if they brought the one-hit thunder or were nothing more than a one-hit blunder. Look, if you listen to the show, you're probably going to laugh, and I guarantee you're going to crush next time the bar has music trivia. Tag Team, Jane Child, Meredith Brooks, Looking Glass, Sean Mullins, Eiffel 65, EMF, Crash Test Dummies, Crazy Town, Chumbawamba. We have hundreds of episodes in our back catalog and a new episode each week. So pass the Dutchie, make sure you're connected, and subscribe to One Hit Thunder wherever you get your pods.
Hello, everybody. I'm Bruce.
And I'm Nolan. And this is the Corner of Gray Street Podcast. As longtime Dave Matthews Band fans, we set out to create a podcast to dive deep into the past, present, and future of DMB.
Not only do we recap and review shows within an ongoing tour, but we revisit past shows from throughout the band's history, conduct interviews with a wide variety of guests with ties to DMB, and create unique and exclusive content like our Concerts on the Corner series.
Whether you're a fan of the band, or just a fan of great music, we think you'll find something you'll enjoy. We can't wait to see you on the corner of Gray Street.